Doom do 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 doom do do.
Hi, plant friends. Welcome to episode 69 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hello, hello, my sweet plant friends. I hope you are having wonderfully planty weeks as per usual, and that you enjoyed last week's episode on Peperomia 101 with Nick Pileggi, which was from the live taping at Urban Jungle Philly. It was such a great episode, and I hope you checked out the YouTube video that we made on the Bloom and Grow YouTube show that is all about Peperomia propagation. So if you haven't, go back and check that out. And I'm just excited in this episode to just touch base with you guys a little bit. So hi, I'm so excited to be back. I'm so excited about this two-part episode series we're doing and about lots of episodes that we have coming to you. Before we dive in to cannabis, this very special, oh my God, mind-blowing episode and chat that we have, I just wanted to talk to you for a little bit. So right now I'm in Charlotte, and some planty thing that's bringing me joy is, I gotta say, the Trader Joe's in Charlotte downtown. Holy moly, plant friends, I bought 4 plants for $10 at the Trader Joe's. If you listened 2 episodes back, something that's been bringing me a lot of joy is buying small plants, keeping them in my hotel, and then gifting them to people. I talk about it in the season 4 intro. You can go back and listen. Anyway, I've been watching these beautiful plants every morning on my hotel windowsill in Charlotte, and they're so cool. So that's been bringing me a lot of joy. So I am having my urban jungle while I travel. And I'm actually going to take our night off with a few of my friends from Cats, and we're going to go do a planty houseboat excursion. There is a planty houseboat on Airbnb that we are going to go spend the night on. So tune into my Insta stories. I'm probably going to be playing it, but I think I'm going to donate these plants to the planty houseboat, which I'm really excited about. I wanted to say thank you. Since season 3, even in the dormancy of the podcast, we've had 10 new Patreon supporters. So thank you, Nettie Porter. Nettie Porter came in over the $4 monthly pledge. Pat Sarmi, thank you for joining, also way over the asking pledge. And then Elizabeth Denton, Sal, Rin, Hillary Dixler Canavan, who has been an amazing supporter of the show from day one, Tina Encarnacion, Amanda Barker, Camila Escauriazza, Renee Jordan. Thank you, you guys, for coming in and becoming a plant friend of Bloom and Grow Radio on Patreon to support the show. And super special thank you to Megan Ping, who came in way over the $4 suggested subscription. I can't even say how much money it is. I'm so blown away. But you all, 10 of you, I'm so thankful to have you in our new community. For those of you who are listening who don't know, Patreon is a way for Bloom and Grow listeners to support the show. Right now, Patreon is fully supporting the editor, our wonderful editor, Aaron, who can edit the show so I can keep pumping out episodes to you every week. And you guys are doing that. You guys are helping me bring the show to thousands of plant people around the world. And I'm so thankful to all of you. So if you're interested in becoming a plant friend on Patreon, you can check the link in the show notes. Another thing about Patreon, if you are interested in joining our Bloom and Grow Garden Club Facebook group now, the Garden Club has probably 1,500 people in it, and there are too many people who are asking to join the club that aren't in the Bloom and Grow community because Facebook is now suggesting it. So because of the demand and because I want to keep the group intimate and only Bloom and Grow listeners, I want it to be an exclusively positive, wonderful group of people. Like I say, the plantiest corner of the internet. The only way you can get into the club now is by joining Patreon and becoming a plant friend. So if you are already in the club, nothing's going to change. It's still going to be the amazing community. But because the Facebook group is just kind of taking on its own life, I just want to be super diligent about protecting it and making sure that we only have positive, wonderful community members as part of it. So if you want to join the Facebook group, also consider becoming a plant friend. So I'm so excited about this two-part episode on cannabis. And I feel like some of you might be wondering why the heck I have an episode on cannabis here. And I wanted to explain. So I got to go to Denver with Cats, and I have a plant friend from Instagram called Rooney Bloom. He is a plant educator in Denver. He is a full-time botanical bro. He does so many different things involving plants. And Rooney and I obviously started talking about cannabis because if you're in Denver, it's such a hot topic. And he arranged for me to tour an industrial cannabis grower just because I was very curious about it. Because we do grow cannabis indoors and it is a huge industry. And with global warming, we're growing a lot of food indoors now, and growing stuff indoors is fun. So I was curious. Rooney arranged this incredible tour, and the founder of the commercial grow house, Chudy, is this amazing guy. The three of us started talking, and I quickly realized that I needed to sit down with both of them and have both of their opinions on how Rooney grows cannabis recreationally, just as a home grower, and Chudy grows it industrially. And the thing that really blew my mind with this conversation, and I truly suggest you listen to both episodes. One will be, the first part is this week, the second part is next week. The conversation is so much more about cannabis plant, friends. It's about how these plants are designed to perfectly thrive in outdoor space with Mother Nature. You put them in the ground and they grow. And these industrial commercial grow houses are using science and technology to replicate and force blooming. And it's just so interesting to see how these commercial growers are working so hard to do what the sun and the earth do so naturally. And it was just the most eye-opening, interesting conversation. You're also going to learn how to grow cannabis. I mean, it's a plant, just like anything else. It's a plant that flowers that you can harvest. But to me, it was just such an enriching conversation. I personally learned so much. I'm so thankful to Chudy and Rooney for being so open with sharing their knowledge and sharing their experience. And I think it's just interesting. We're all growing, right? We're all home growers. So I hope you enjoy it. Because of the hot topic nature of cannabis, I do want to say for listeners, I know a lot of people listen with their kids, let's give this a PG-13 rating just because it is about hot topics. People have opinions about cannabis, so you can listen or not listen, but it's a super interesting chat that I'm so excited to bring to you. Another disclosure I just want to give you guys is I was in Denver where this was legal to be growing cannabis. I showed up to this conversation as just a curious plant person. I am in no way endorsing you to grow your own cannabis. I am in no way saying anything. I am just curiously asking questions to people who really know how to do this. So this is not an endorsement to go ahead and grow cannabis. This is just an exploration of an industry in the growing world that is super interesting. 100%, if you are interested in doing this, you must look up your local laws. You must look up the national laws. It is on you to fully empower yourself with all the information you need before thinking about potentially growing. Because for me, this conversation is more about the industry behind it and the act of growing and not even just being so instructional. So that's my disclaimer. Before I bring you this conversation with two botanical bros who I adore, I want to tell you guys about a company that I have been using for 8 months and am completely obsessed with, Highline Wellness. So, plant friends, Highline Wellness makes premium CBD products at honest and affordable prices. I love this company. They make CBD gummies, CBD oil, and CBD pain cream that have broad spectrum CBD with absolutely no THC and are all third-party lab tested. And I've been using their products to help manage my anxiety and sleep well in all of the different hotel rooms and Airbnbs that I've been sleeping in across the country over the last 6 months. Stay tuned to the end of today's episode if you want me to break down CBD versus THC and why these CBD products are actually legal in all 50 states and have no stigma attached to them. So when I first started using CBD, I used the Highline Wellness Chews, which are their gummies. They're vegan, gluten-free, non-GMO, dairy-free, fat-free, artificial color-free, soy-free, wheat-free, yeast-free. They have no artificial sweeteners. And plant friends, they're so freaking delicious. Sometimes I only take two, they're 10 milligrams each. And sometimes it would be hard for me to not eat a third one just because they're so delicious. And I also like to use their CBD oil. It's amazing. It actually has a slight mint flavor to it. So I often put it in my hot chocolate that I make at night as part of my bedtime ritual. And it's just this really nice way to lull myself to sleep. Their anti-inflammatory CBD pain cream is also awesome for fast joint and muscle pain relief. So I use it on sore muscles after a workout or if I'm dancing a lot in the show. So, Highline Wellness is offering 15% off of your first purchase of their amazing CBD products. So check out HighlineWellness.com, check out all the amazing products they have, and use code BLOOM15 for 15% off your first purchase. Once again, head to HighlineWellness.com and use code BLOOM15 for 15% off. All right, here is Rooney and Chudy. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Rooney and Chudy, welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio. I'm so excited to have you guys on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
I love that the original idea for this podcast was to be two separate episodes, and then we all just got together for an amazing tour of Chudy's grow house called The Garden, and listening to you guys talk to each other, I immediately knew this needed to be a three-person episode, so I'm so happy. Rooney has been kind enough. We are recording from his amazing house. I'm so used to calling homes apartments. from Rooney's amazing house, where you have so many indoor and outdoor plants. How old is the Monstera again?
In 1958, I got it from a gentleman who was moving to Bali, and he knew that I'd give it its love that it's needed, and so he are growing in the corner, and she just put out her first leaf, and it's really incredible to see. But Newport Beach, California, from the 50s, and he got it when he was 12 years old.
So. Oh, unbelievable. So we are going to have an awesome conversation about growing cannabis. I've learned that I'm not allowed to call it weed. It's supposed to be called cannabis, right? What's the deal with that? It's weed is just too stigmatized.
Yeah. And yeah. I think like being well-versed in outdoor growing, a weed is typically something that has negative connotations. You know, you think of a weed as something you don't want growing in your garden. Mm-hmm. You want a weed to like go away. And we put that stigma on something so beautiful and transformative as cannabis. It loses a lot of its incredible qualities.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And as the state moves towards federal regulation, cannabis is more acceptable as a term to use.
Interesting. Okay. That checks out. So before we dive in, I'd love to just hear about the both of you and how you have kind of become the plant parent botanical bros that you are, where your passion started and how it's kind of evolved to growing cannabis and in what way you grow them, because we've got a personal grower and a commercial grower. So Rooney, you want to start?
Cool. Yeah. I'm Rooney of Rooney Bloom. I specialize in everything from interior to outdoor growing and plants. I'm a learner. I'm a lifelong learner. And so I strive to constantly educate myself and grow, if you will.
Yes.
So that's kind of what I do. I got started really, really more professionally in plants in 2015, living in San Francisco, California. And that was in working in the floral industry. Not professionally, that was just for decor in my apartment. And that kind of changed and transformed me in working with plants to what I do present day. And that's working with a lot of the public on plant education. And that's kind of what I do today. And part of that is intertwining medicine and the medicine that I use into what I grow and having something that's so beautiful and that's been used and gathered around and celebrated for centuries that I can have in my garden too.
I love a few things about you. Number one, I feel like you just have your hand in so many pots. In, by the way, we're recording in Denver, Colorado, where this is all legal, but you have your hand in so many different planty pots. You had a brick and mortar. You are a landscape designer. You're a plant consultant. You're an herbalist. Like, you do so many things. And also, something that's been blowing my mind while I've been on this tour is this community of plant friends that have reached out to me. And Rooney, from the minute he knew I was coming to Denver, reached out to me on Instagram. You've extended yourself, offering any sort, like whatever help I've needed. You've helped orchestrate this magical interview we're about to have. So I just wanted to say thank you for being here, and thank
pleasure.
You for hosting us.
And it's all with the intentions of growing and sharing. And thank you for having this platform for individuals who are nervous to grow or approach plants because they're living in the end. You provide the platform for people having this knowledge to grow and having an open space to where having a succulent, keeping a succulent alive is not frightening.
Right.
And if you feel empowered and you know that you have resources that you can go to, resources that you can listen to,
right,
then more, you know, more especially you can feel transformed and changed as I have. And so thank you. I'm honored.
Checks. All right, Trudy, what about you? How did you get from neurobiology to the head of a grow operation in Denver?
It was all on a whim. Two of my best friends and I had this idea to initially we wanted to grow cannabis in Texas where it's highly legal. And so we wanted to grow in our friend's basement. And one of my friends, who's very well connected through his parents and through other investors, went out and raised money for us to move out here.
Wow.
And on a whim, I dropped everything in my education to come out and at least try it out. And I've been here for the last 4 years. And so through trial and error, we've come to grow the best cannabis I've ever come across.
And there'll be photos. We just visited the garden. It's so wild.
Spectacular.
So wild. Rooney and I just had our jaws on the floor the whole time.
I don't know if you heard that sigh, but I just, it's incredible.
I love that emotion that cannabis brings to people. Just the overwhelming, like, awe of it.
In all the senses. Like,
yeah. Visual, the smell.
Everything.
Yeah. It's
touch, feel.
Sensory overload.
Yeah. Totally. So you were getting a degree in neurobiology when you left to do this?
Oh, well, I had just graduated.
You had just graduated.
Within 8 months, I was up here building a grow and getting it outfitted for plants.
And so you and your friends, all of the founders of, it's called The Garden.
Yes, The Garden.
And you all just kind of figured out how to do it. All probably coming, none of you have degrees in horticulture.
No, not at all. A lot of YouTube videos.
Okay.
Surprisingly, a lot of books that we just read. And then we had a mentor who had lived here for the last 10 years growing cannabis, and he taught us everything he knew.
Wow, that's amazing. It must be so fun to build a company with your friends.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's been quite the ride in the last 4 years, but it's all been cool.
And it's interesting that you have this like scientific brain, but you are approaching science in a different way. Because the big thing that struck me with the conversations that we were having, the three of us, is your approach to commercial growing cannabis is very different than Rooney's approach to home growing.
My approach is very much on the micro end. I look at the small inputs, the small nutrients. It's a completely different way to approach things.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of the industry looks at cannabis that way at the moment.
Yeah. Because when you're growing on a commercial scale, it's just you have to manufacture what nature is doing, but you also want to kind of be like the best version of nature so you could get like the most yield of the crop.
Yeah. So we're kind of just growing active ingredients almost rather than growing plants. We're growing plants that produce the highest THC content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's wild. So just as we start our conversation about it, I mean, I come from New York City where it's so illegal. No one talks about cannabis. And I've always just, I mean, it's another plant. I'm curious to learn how people who can grow it legally do it and what perfect way to have like the two opposite sides of the spectrum. So why don't we talk about say you are living in a city where it is legal to grow. Let's just keep saying legal. Do not do this illegally. I'm not endorsing this illegally. What do you need as a setup? So what does growing commercially take? You had all sorts of fancy lights. You had all sorts of fancy coco quarn, all of that kind of stuff. Like, what is the upstart?
So the main inputs are clean water initially. You need different sorts of filtration to produce clean source of water so that your nutrients don't react to the minerals in the water. You want the water chemistry to be very stable.
Okay.
And not have many inputs in it already. The next big thing would be soil medium. If it's rock wool or if it's coco coir or just plain old soil, that is one of the biggest costs of growing cannabis.
Okay. The soil, the growing medium. Okay.
Lighting is the next, one of the bigger things too, is because we grow indoors, we don't have natural source of light. So we have to have lights that produce almost.
Are they T5s? Like, are they?
Well, we use T5s in propagation. In the bedrooms and the flower rooms, we use double-ended Gavitas.
And is that an LED? I don't know what a Gavita
is. It's just a high sodium, high-pressure sodium light.
Oh, a sodium light. Okay, interesting. So you're even getting down to the science of using different lights. Yeah. Why do you use T5s for propagation versus?
They're not as stressful to the plant.
Okay.
So in the lighting spectrum of a T5 encourages plants to root faster, whereas under HPS, it might actually burn the cutting or prevent seedlings from sprouting.
So the sodium is like stronger.
Yeah. It's like it's what we use to replicate the sun, but we don't really get all the spectrum that the sun provides.
And where do you source your seeds from?
Seeds are usually sourced in-house. We do our own genetic crossing in-house. Mm-hmm. If not from in-house, there are different seed companies in the state of Colorado that provide seeds legally.
Okay. So you probably started with a few seeds, and the more you grow, the more you harvest, and then you can kind of just put those back into
new sprouts. And then cuttings as well. So there are facilities that just sell cuts to people. Mm-hmm. From that, we can start a full operation.
And back to soil, two follow-up questions. So what is your like secret sauce of the soil that you guys use? I know you said pretty much purely coco coir.
Yeah, it's about 80% coco coir. And then we use perlite and peat. And then the soil itself has biochar in it, so it holds on to nutrients longer. Okay. And it reduces our water intake.
Okay. How do you purify the water?
Our water is run through, starts with a dechlorination station, and then it goes through a salt filter. So it pulls all the mineral out of it. And then from there, the water is run through a 0.04 parts per million ultra filter.
Whoa. Okay.
So we can get water that has nothing in it, and this is completely distilled.
Wow. And where do you get the water from? Are you collecting rainwater?
No, it's just a municipal city supply.
There's laws actually in the state of Colorado, which is interesting, protecting against over harvest of any water that falls onto the state. So I believe, and then you can break it down within commercial and residential. So I'm legally in Denver able to have one rain barrel. I believe it's 55 gallons. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
So, and I'm not sure if you'd be able to even collect rain, which is unfortunate.
Right.
And I think it's something that we should talk about as, not on this platform, but it's an interesting concept how in this situation you could and maybe even reduce some of your carbon footprint and impact.
Yeah, if we could collect rainwater to filter, we'd cut some of the cost and environmental impact.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
So a good point for water, because that's an interesting process. And to consider that that's what you do in order to get distilled water. And then, we're watering all of our plants with that. We're watering our outdoor veggies with that. We're also, a lot of people are drinking that water.
Right. It makes me think of, with house plants, like what the whole like filtered versus unfiltered water debate. Mm-hmm. And I've been just so stubborn about like, my plants aren't going to drink nicer water than I do. And I drink from the New York City tap water. Mm-hmm. Like my plants are drinking that too. Uh-huh. But you see the white residue on the leaves and on the soil when there's too much
calcium. And what was
calcium.
His first step in making this water? Dechlorinization, right?
Yeah, that's a huge step.
Dechlorinization out of water that's coming out of our faucets.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. And now I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do it. That's like my Venus flytrap was the only thing I
bought.
Something
to consider and do more research on. I believe most cities' water schedules are public. That's public information. To be able to research that information and see what your, for example, Denver City Water, you can see what the specific levels are within the water and how those change.
Yeah. So, Rooney, you are a home grower. You've experimented growing at home. So what does it take? I mean, I would imagine you've just kind of have the setup that Chudy, that the garden is working so hard to replicate. So what does it really take to set up for you?
Yeah. And for me, considering my background, I'm a scientist at heart. I don't have a badge or, you know, any particular type of tool that deems me as a particular type of scientist, but I'm a scientist in the sense that I like explore and I observe and I experiment, and gardening has been one of those. And so the process I've taken and that I've continued to take on growing cannabis is, to me, my process. It may be similar to others, but from what I've heard, it can be a bit different as well. And it's quite simple. It truly is. And getting back to what it takes for a plant to grow, and the first step would be germination. That's really where I start. On my property itself, I do not filter my water.
You've got the coolest little setup with your rain barrel.
Yeah, I don't.
I've never seen one of those before.
Large parts of my garden that I water, I do water with my hose, but I do my best to water, and this is an arid desert, so I do my best to water with my rain barrel water, but I, you know, besides that, I water with my spigot from my house. And I'm just doing my best. When I can when I can own a home, I'd probably invest in some type of water filtration process, but I rent, and unfortunately, we know how that goes. So yeah, that's kind of what I do. Soil tests are recommended if you're planting in your soil. And from there, it's similar to growing any type of...
Do you start your seeds indoors?
I do. I always start my seeds indoors, and I usually will start those in March. I've started them earlier, and I've also just gone to the store and bought clones. Here in Colorado, some of the dispensaries actually will sell clones that are on their way to, you know, becoming
clones. Meaning already sprouted.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so yeah, they're about plants. a foot.
Yeah, like the rooted ones we saw.
Like how I just went and bought my basil.
And they're in those wool pods, in the wool kind of starter pods, if you will. And so I'll germinate them in soil, and then I move them usually straight outside when I can. In the past, I've built a hoop house to keep them warmer, as the weather fluctuates in Colorado until mid-May. We get some pretty chilly
weather. Colorado's got wacky weather.
Yeah, yeah. So more recently, in the past 2 years, I've grown just directly with no hoop house, and I've put them out late May. I usually do June 1 just to be safe.
You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. So when you start your seeds indoors, what is the investment? Like, what is the setup that you need? Do you have a grow light?
Yeah, it's just a, not even a grow light. You just need a good window. Okay. And, which is, and people are like, whoa, wow, that's really tough. And they get very apprehensive about the idea of having to bring to life something and then care for something. And if you know two things, which is moisture and warmth, then you know germination.
Right.
People equate the sunlight to warmth. That's fine. That's great. But you don't have to necessarily put your seed on a windowsill to germinate, because if you have a warm spot and a moist area, your seed is going to germinate.
Do you have any of those like heating pads people can buy?
Yeah, I've used them in the past. And honestly, I've just run to Target and bought one of those room heaters that's like $45 and it kicks on when it goes underneath a certain temperature. So like 65. Interesting.
Okay.
And then, you know, rooms are small enough. You could do a bathroom somewhere even to start, somewhere just for, you know, 4 days to 10 days, somewhere to start the germination process before you need to move it into sunlight. And that's what I've done for warmth. And in being in Denver, you know, when you're starting your seeds, when it's still winter and much colder. And I keep my house at 65 during the day and 60 at night, which is a bit warmer for the germination process. They probably would like to be closer to 75.
Right.
And then my seeds have been closer to like 85, 90, and they germinated in 2 days.
Yeah, I bet.
And it was really wild to see. So yeah, and it's very basic. When their first two leaves open up, and then you need to start considering proper sunlight and or a light in indoor growing in this case. But so that's when I'll move it to the window.
To the window.
To the window.
I've only started from seed once because I live in no space. It's just easier for us to buy plants. But I started tomato seeds once and I had the most busted setup, but I was so proud of it. I had my plastic egg carton with the seed starter in it. Then I covered that with plastic wrap. And then I took a literal heating pad, like for my cramps. I took a cookie cooling tray. So the cookie cooling thing that you can put the cookies on. Then I put the heating pad on top of that. Then I put the egg carton on top of that. It wasn't in the windowsill. It was just on a table, like a little farther, and the seeds germinated like magic.
But
it's
the warmth and moisture right
there. This is so busted. It's like hilarious. So if you're interested in what my setup looked like, you can go back and listen to episode 20, Seed Starting Growing Tomatoes with Craig LaHoulier. But
that's great.
He's so silly.
That's awesome.
So we know what seed starting looks like for you, Rooney, now. So what does seed starting look like from a commercial perspective?
So on the commercial side, it's a little more hands-on, maybe just for us, because we'd like to take a
you
lot
gotta
of care.
Get the bang for your buck too.
We need to get everything out of the seeds. So we start by soaking our seeds in water for at least 24 to 48 hours.
Okay.
From there, they go into the small cocoa cubes that you guys saw. It's just a 2-inch cocoa coir cube.
Yeah, tiny. It's and, like a whole little crate of these tiny squares
and
that
then
you stick.
Exactly. And then we put those in a terracotta tray. And the cubes are already pre-cut to insert a seed into, so you just push the seeds down and push it about halfway through.
One seed per cube.
Yeah, one seed per cube. And then from there, they go into complete darkness for at least 24 hours. And then within 24 hours, you can start to see them breaking the surface of the cocoa coir cube.
Do you heat them?
No, because our garden's
it's actually pretty warm in
it's
there.
It's very, almost tropical-like in there. So the ambient temperature inside of the domes that we put these terracotta trays in gives the seeds like the perfect environment to germinate. Mm-hmm. Once they're germinated, it's probably 2 or 3 days before they start to show their first leaves. And we don't give them any nutrients at this point because the starter cube.
They're in sterile coir.
Yes.
It. Okay.
And the coir itself has nutrients to provide the plant for those first 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we don't actually introduce nutrients until the first 3 weeks of the seed's life.
Those first 3 weeks, the seed is still living. It's still sprouting, growing just two leaves in the little squares.
Yes.
You haven't upgraded its house yet.
No, we leave them in there for at least 3 weeks.
So 3 weeks completely sterile, and then you start feeding it. And then what do you feed it with?
So we use a brand of synthetic nutrients. They're very micronized nutrients so that the plants are able to break them down and uptake them very easily without any leftover like heavy metals in the soil or medium. From there, though, they go into a bigger cube where they start to get nutrients. And then the brand of nutrients we use is a company called VegBloom.
Okay.
Who produces this product out in California.
Is that when you introduce the biochar that you said, is that the name of it?
Yeah, the biochar is actually introduced when we take them into the next size. So there's 3 stages of the seed's life, starting from the very small cube to a medium size 2.5-inch cube to an actual 2-gallon pot with powdered like cocoa coir.
Okay, and that's when you're putting the char in.
Yes.
Okay, so very similar. I mean, not too different at this point. And the timeline sounds pretty much the same because the seed, you can't expedite.
No, you just have to let it do its thing.
Maybe altering the heat, you can reduce the a few days, but the seed's going to germinate. You're going to have it in some sterile soil. And then that's it. Are there any like troubleshooting that you've noticed that you need to kind of be wary of at this stage? from commercial or home growing?
I mean, in my experience, seeds are very hardy and very tolerant.
Yeah.
For those first 3 weeks, they literally do what they're programmed to do. Mm-hmm. I've never really run into troubleshooting in that regard.
Yeah. Okay. And Chudy mentions a good point that I actually didn't think about before is introducing nutrients in it, because it's not necessary with a plan. If you think about similar to humans in the sense that, you know, they've got this embryo that's got the nutrients that it needs in order to kind of get these leaves up and to kind of get going.
Yeah.
And so it kind of just sprouts and go. And so it's not necessary to really introduce nutrients until you find a more permanent home, which in that sense would be the larger piece that it goes into. But I've never run into any issues either. I mean, you know, in order to get one or two plants for my outdoor growing here, I will start maybe 6 or 7 seeds. And what I don't end up growing into a full adult, I'll either give away to friends or ends up being a male. Right. And so I will dispose of that very quickly.
So what's the seed to ground timeline for you for home growing?
So I'd say 4 to 6 weeks. And it really depends on weather here for me. It's not necessarily the size of the plant. And that's probably if it was in a different climate. If we were in a more tropical climate and a more humid climate, we could move it out earlier. Uh-huh. And I mean, you can theoretically even start it in the ground from seed. Mm-hmm. So it really just depends. It's usually 4 to 6 weeks. Sometimes it could be a bit longer. And if I, like, again, if I just want to do like small modifications to my backyard, it could be like running to the hardware store and grabbing some PVC and some thick tarp and starting a hoop house. And again, with that same concept of then moving that heater from inside the bathroom out to your hoop house, you can also theoretically create a mini greenhouse for like $50.
Right. Okay.
And move your cannabis plant into the ground a lot sooner. But it's about, I would say, 4 to 6 weeks.
And you mentioned male versus female plants. Something I had no idea that was a thing with cannabis. So can you dive into like what that's about?
Sure. I'm going to do my best because, again, from a just a home grower.
Yeah, you can tag team it. Yeah.
This is very like trial and error. Again, I'm still kind of working through that. I'm in my third. This will be my fourth year after this year. So I'm going into my fourth year of outdoor growing. But
we're recording this episode in April. It's probably not going to air for a while. So you're just entering your fourth season. Yeah.
My fourth season. So, you know, for me, what I do know is males, they produce seeds and they produce the sperm, which pollinates the female. And so your buds, which you smoke, are female produced. If they are pollinated, they will be seedy, or they won't produce as high levels of THC that are going to give you what you're hoping for. And so what you want to do is prevent males from being around females, because what we do know happens is they pollinate each other.
So you want the female plant.
You will only want the
females. Females are what you're looking for in the end.
Correct. But we know how to get seeds, and that's because you have to have a male. But that would be in a very specialized, particular environment. And even one thing that I didn't even think about mentioning is outdoor growing. If you've even got a male within a few mile radius, the pollen from that male can theoretically pollinate your female that you're outdoor growing. So if your neighbors are growing, they aren't educated on male versus female, and they're growing a male that can pollinate your female, and you can get seedy cannabis.
Interesting. So how can you tell male and female apart?
Very visually.
Males have these little pollen sacs that they drop. So they grow up and kind of curve around the flower of the plant.
Okay.
Whereas female plants have almost spiked ends.
Of the leaves or of the flower?
On the stems.
On the stem.
Yeah, it's right at the base of the stems and the flowers.
Yeah, from a novice standpoint, it is kind of hard to identify male and female until they've gotten later into the life cycle, when you can tell one is strictly male and one is a female.
So do you just start all the seeds and then you get to a point where you weed out all the males?
Exactly. Correct. Yeah.
How large is the plant when you do that?
I mean, anywhere from 6 inches to 2 feet, 3 feet.
When you realize it's a male, you pull
and
it out.
Male and female is always designated by the light cycles. From an indoor standpoint, when we go into flower, the plants will start to show their sexual expression.
Right.
And you can tell at that point which one's male and which one's female.
Sexual expression, like that.
Yeah, and again, like he, I'm so sorry to say, but he mentioned pollen sacs. Like you think about humans and you think about plants. Uh-huh. And for me, again, maybe as a scientist, that's why it makes sense to me. And visually, that's why I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see this as a male, because I think about a flower. A flower is, you know, supposed to be attractive, so that's where everything gets pollinated. And you think about the symbols in, you know, human culture of what flower symbolizes, and that's with feminine and, you know, things more of like the female reproductive system and things of those sorts. And that's similar to nature as well.
Wow. Okay. Oh my God. I'm learning so much already. We're like not even halfway through this.
And that's why cannabis is such an incredible plant.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, and what I'm learning through talking with you guys is it's not necessarily the easiest plant, or it does take some care and some knowledge to properly harvest. So we've got the seed starting. You're waiting until the weather gets right to put in the ground. You're letting it grow 4 weeks.
About 4 weeks.
Before. 4 weeks in the little cube. And then it gets maybe how many leaves on it?
By this point, it has...
It's like
a dozen. It's a
foot
like
tall.
Yeah, it's a full size plant at this point.
And then it's graduating. It's got these like juicy roots. I'll have photos in the show notes for people to see. And then it graduates to the medium sized pot. We start feeding it.
From there, we start feeding it and give it maybe another 2 weeks because it has such an established root system at this point. It takes to that new pot very easily.
Okay, so it's going to grow really fast.
Yeah, and it's going to grow in half the amount of time it took the seedling to grow.
And you're giving it so. The interesting thing with talking with you is you guys manipulate the light to like the best degree. So your plants are getting 18 hours of light a day?
Yes, 18 hours of light at 600 watts per light.
600 watts.
Its output.
So that plant is going to be able to grow much more rapidly than obviously waiting for whatever the cycle that your garden, your outdoor garden might get.
I mean, it's still nowhere close to the intensity and power of the sun, but it's about the next efficient method to go about doing it indoors.
What's your process for putting them in the ground?
So, yeah. And then, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider for, you know, some of the little more just, I guess, basic thinking, which is, again, the sun. And so you have to wait on the sun. So when you consider the tilt of the earth and going into the season changes, then you consider, okay, here we are in April and May when the days are getting longer. And so you have to, in theory, wait in order to get maybe those dozen leaves. Maybe my plant will have more like 6 to 8, and it's a little bit more leggy because she's really reaching for the sun indoors. But once I get her outside, that's when she starts.
She takes off.
Yeah, and then you consider that we're in June, and so our days are almost at its longest day, which would be the summer equinox, which is on the 21st of June. And that's when, you know, they're really kind of full on growing, whereas, you know, in more of a controlled environment. So that's kind of what that's like. And again, back to weather as well. So, you know, we could have maybe not so much here in Denver, but maybe more of a tropical places where you have a week of rain here. You know, we're very fortunate. We're, I think, arguably one of the sunniest cities in the country. And so, yeah, when she's outside, you know, she's about a foot tall, but I'd say a little bit more leggy, a little bit more leafy.
Okay.
A little bit more
and
leafy.
What are your like best practices for actually putting them in the ground where like you don't necessarily have control over like feeding the soil or, you know, the roots around like whatever's been in the ground? Do you prepare the earth in any specific way?
Or? I do. There's soil tests that you can get. I personally have not done a soil test. I've known about the history of this property. But if you're moving into a new property, you could get a soil test done to just kind of see what's going on in your soil. And then from there, you can do small improvements to make it so that your soil is going to be conducive for growing a really healthy plant.
What kind of soil do they like? More acidic, more whatever?
It is a little bit more acidic. For us, our coca coir has a pH range of 5.8 to 6.2.
Okay.
And so
that's a small margin.
Yeah.
And then we're really control it.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
And then we're also feeding our nutrients in at 5.9. So everything stays relatively within plus or minus 0.1 of that range.
Cool.
And so I guess for listener knowledge, if you're like in the past, my plants have been in soil that's been similar to what I keep my succulents and cacti in. It's very sandy. It drains really easily, but I water it with rainwater constantly. And so that's where the nutrients are coming into play with my outdoor growing. This is not something that's going to be keeping moisture around the roots. I want to stay away from any potentials of mold and the arid desert climate that we've got here in Denver. It's a pretty good. I mean, she dries
helps
out completely.
Out there,
she dries out completely between waterings. And
even like apparently yesterday was the rainiest day Denver had had, and your garden beds are like pretty dry today.
I just watered
yeah,
them.
You just had to water them. And yesterday it was like the ground was soaked.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's exactly what this is like. And it's pretty sandy back there. And so, and then I'll put, you know, just some compost that I have from my yard, or, you know, I'll get some compost from the facilities, the city facilities. I have a compost bin that I pay for the city, and then they offer a reduced price to pick up compost. So I'll get a load of that in the spring. And usually just once I dig my hole for my plant, I'll put that at the base and then I'll set them in it. And truly it's rainwater from there.
Cool.
Rainwater and the sun.
Yeah. And the sun.
I do no fertilizing. I've never done any fertilizing. I've never done anything other than letting them have full sun and rainwater.
Wow. And that's so different for you. You told me you feed like 20 times a day or something, right?
Yeah, they're considered microfeeds, so the plant gets 2 to 3 minutes of feed, and then it stops for maybe 40 minutes before the next cycle comes. Mm-hmm. And that keeps the plant always wanting more food. Since we're
like addicted.
Since we're indoors and we're driving growth consistently, the plant needs amazing amounts of food to continually grow.
Because coir is sterile, are you considered hydroponic? I know hydroponics and cannabis are like usually the same. So do you grow hydroponically?
Yeah, I mean, coir is a method of hydroponic.
It is a method of hydroponic. Medium. Okay. Because you're feeding it, you're putting all the nutrients in it via water.
So it's almost like using rock wool in a sense.
Got it.
Okay. It has the same properties. It doesn't have anything that will react to the plant.
Okay. So in the next stage, which is the leafy stage, but I don't know if there's a fancy name for this, but the leafy stage before it buds, what are like best practices commercially?
I love it. The leafy stage.
The leafy stage. Yeah. Where the flowers pop out.
It's beautiful.
I have a podcast about plants. Yeah.
I love it. I was wondering the same thing. Maybe that's why I love that. Because I was like, what do you call it?
So we consider it the vegetative stage.
The vegetative stage.
Because it's not flowering.
Yeah.
Because it's not flowering. Gotcha. So what are the best practices for commercial growing in the vegetative stage? And how long does that take for you guys?
So our vegetative stage lasts maybe from as early as 4 weeks to as long as 6 weeks, depending on how long it takes a plant to veg. Some plants have different growth rates, and we can manipulate those
different like strains of cannabis that you might be growing. Okay.
And we can manipulate those rates with our nutrients and the lighting, but still those plants have their like intrinsic growth factors. Mm-hmm. Like they grow a certain way and take a certain time. But since our veg room is pretty small and we pack a lot of plants into it, we have to continually defoliate and remove fan leaves from plants to keep the light penetration consistent across the tables that we use.
And removing a fan leaf, meaning removing the large leaves that might be shading all the other leaves of the plant. So the ideal leaf is like a smaller leaf.
Yeah. And that still absorbs the sun. It still is able to photosynthesize, but it doesn't take away from the other nodes around the plant that need light just as much.
It's better to have like six smaller leaves than one big leaf. Like that, obviously the six leaves are going to have more photosynthesis abilities. Okay. And then what does your vegetative state look like? You let them chill in the ground.
Yeah. So as soon as, like, as I was mentioning, they're about a foot tall and a little bit more leafy. As soon as they get into the sun, they really start popping with leaves. Mm-hmm. And then when they get about two...
You cut yours back too,
right? About two and a half feet tall, I'll top them. So I just completely take a top. I can even just pinch them, just pinch off the top. And that causes them to kind of reshoot. They push out from the bottom again. And that causes them
back,
to be... Yeah, I pinch it. Mm-hmm. And that's just causing them to be lower and more full at the base, so they're not so tall and
it's
leggy.
Like stocky, right.
Yeah, and I've never found, I'm not sure what the difference would be versus letting them go other than for just, you know, I do mine for more kind of aesthetics and just
it was wild at the garden, like the trees. I mean, the cannabis trees that you guys have, they're like
those
7 feet
tall.
Those are ones
that we just let go and have tops very few times. Mm-hmm. But ideally, we do like the top so that we have as many top nodes as we can get.
Because for every like kind of stalk that you have,
it's going to take
not
up
making leaves.
Exactly. And it takes up a bit of surface area on the table. So we like to pack the tables with as many flower sites as we can.
Okay. So it's in the vegetative state for 4 to 6 weeks. The life cycle is like pretty short. I'm kind of surprised at like from seed to harvest how quick it is. So you have the vegetative state, and then how do you get it to flower? Plant friends, I told you, isn't this such an interesting conversation? So if you are interested in the second half of the growth phase and a really cool conversation just about the cannabis industry and cannabis in general, stay tuned. So this week's episode was titled Part 1, Set Up Seed Starting and the Vegetative Stage. Next week's episode is titled Flowering to Harvest. So we're going to learn about how to get the plant to flower, how to harvest it, what tools you need to harvest, and then this great conversation. So make sure you are subscribed on your preferred podcast player to tune into the second half next week, because you are not going to want to miss it. Believe you me. Thank you again to my amazing Patreon supporters. If you are interested in becoming a plant friend of Bloom and Grow Radio on Patreon, click the link in the show notes. And thank you so much to Highline Wellness for sponsoring today's episode. As promised, I just wanted to get clear and break down the differences between CBD, THC, and cannabis Because this is an educational podcast and Highline Wellness is really committed to being transparent about their product, and I thought it would make sense to share the information on their website with you. This episode is on cannabis, but I want to clarify that CBD has no THC in it because it's derived from hemp. So people get confused about this. So CBD stands for cannabidiol. It's one of over 100 chemicals from cannabis and is most often derived from hemp. So that intoxicating high feeling from smoking cannabis actually only comes from THC, which is tetrahydrocannabinol. Let's hope I pronounced that right. And it's not found in CBD. And that's really important to me. So when I was interested in trying CBD for sleep and anxiety, I started researching CBD companies, and it became really apparent to me that not all CBD companies are created equal. And I love that Highline Wellness goes above and beyond with the quality of their products, and they send all of their products to a third party. So they're third party lab tested, meaning they send their products out to a lab before we can purchase them to make sure that they have the proper amount of CBD, they have no pesticides or chemicals, and absolutely zero trace of THC. If you're curious for more information, they actually have a whole FAQ on their website that you can check out. But it's important to me that you guys are educated, so if you choose to try these products, you can make an educated purchase. I use them to sleep. They just help me calm down at the end of the day. I've used the gummies, the chews, to manage stage fright and anxiety, and they've just really improved my life, and I'm so thankful for this company. So head to HighlineWellness.com to learn more about all of their amazing products, their chews, their oils, their creams, their dog treats, and use the code BLOOM15 for 15% off. Also, plant friends, I am putting together another community episode, so I want to hear from you. I released a mini episode earlier last week with all of the instructions for a community episode celebrating Indoor Gardening Week. So I want to hear your favorite plant story. It's super simple. You call into a phone number and tell me your plant story, and you get the chance to be featured in an upcoming community episode. Those community episodes are so near and dear to my heart. I love them so much. So head to the episode and blog that I released last week that's titled Community Episode Indoor Gardening Week Instructions, and I run you down exactly how to do it, and I can't wait to hear your plant stories, and I can't wait to feature you in an upcoming episode. So until next week, my plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.